Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good Tuesday afternoon to each and every one of you, wherever you might be out there in Stand in the Gap Today territory. And along with Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I am Gary Dahl, and we are delighted to have you with us today. And we trust that you had a great Memorial Day weekend. And, of course, if you will recall, yesterday we ended the program by me asking Sam Rohr what would be the most profound food item on his table during his picnic. And, of course, he didn't know. He said, well, I haven't seen the table yet, although he did describe, if you will recall, that he was going to have his family there with his 10 grandchildren. He's going to tell his children stories, and they were going to be in the backyard, and nobody would be there to see them. They would be very private. So, Sam, having set that stage, are you ready to answer the question, what was the most profound food on your table yesterday at the Memorial Day picnic?
Gary, I think I might use the word, not necessarily profound, but found food.
Okay.
I found a lot of good food on the table yesterday. Mm-hmm. That went the range of everything from cold watermelon to hamburgers and on the grill and, you know, the normal kinds of things that you like to kind of sit down in the shade and have the breeze blowing by and sit there. And that's what happened with us yesterday. And I did tell my grandchildren some stories. I did. And it was they sat there with rapt attention and good opportunity just to teach a little bit, share a few things. And so we did. We did all of those things, I'm glad to say.
Well, that's good. Now, the question was, were those true stories you were telling your grandchildren?
Well, you know, that was one of the questions that came up. Is that really true? No, they actually not. They did. No, I told them a personal story of one time when I broke a windshield in my car that my dad happened to be in when he was cleaning it, and how my dad threw a rock, and it unfortunately went through the windshield of the car, and he was right there, and he didn't get angry. He saw very clearly that it was a mistake and that that was not intentional, and he did not get angry at me, and it made a profound impression on me how a dad should respond. And I shared that with my grandkids last night because one of my grandkids had broken a back window in their dad, my oldest son's, car. And my oldest son reminded me, he said, "Dad, when we get together, would you share that story with the boys? I think they would benefit by it." And I did. And believe it or not, it really opened up the discussion with all of them about a lot of things. But you know what? Just real life stories, simple thing. But that's what a lot of, you know, Memorial Days are all about.
So did your grandson look at his dad and say, "Dad, why didn't you do the same thing that my great grandpa did?"
Well, if actually I looked at my oldest son and said, "And how did you respond?" And it was all positive. He did, because he remembered that story when I told him, and he responded well. And it was a good learning experience for all of the children. It really was.
I have a similar story I could tell. Not now. I will get into that later. But it's amazing what you learn from your parents and what they don't do sometimes when you were expecting them to do something else. David, how was your Memorial Day celebration yesterday, sir?
Well, Gary, to be honest with you, I ended up working in the yard most of the day. We have a big thing coming up this next weekend. And so my wife loves flowers, and so we planted flowers, we watered flowers, we mowed, we did a lot of things in the yard. So it ended up not being, you know, just a commemoration only of Memorial Day. It was a lot of day of work.
Well, you know, are you mixing up your holidays? Because, you know, in about 3 months, it's going to be Labor Day. What are you going to do on Labor Day? Remember those who have given their lives for our country?
Well, Gary, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a little more of a break on Labor Day is what I'm going to do. Yeah, I think I've got them confused.
Well, that's okay. We had the privilege of having our parents out, of course, or my parents out during the afternoon. But in the morning, we're in the Altoona Memorial Day praying and passed out a lot of gospel tracts and had a our van all fixed up with flags on and everything in the parade, and we just had a great opportunity. And so it was good. It was good. We had good weather here. And so, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you might be today, I trust that you had a good Memorial Day weekend and a great day yesterday, and we're back at it again. You know, over the weekend, we've been watching some of these storms and floods and the tornadoes and things that are going on down in Texas and even in Mexico and some of our other southern states. And a number of people have been killed. As a matter of fact, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, has declared disasters in 37 counties in the state of Texas. And, of course, there may be other counties that will be receiving that designation as well. The storms not only were in Mexico and Texas, but they pushed their way eastward into Arkansas and Louisiana. By yesterday evening, as a matter of fact, a tornado touched down in North Little Rock and didn't have a whole lot of damage. But the Times-Picayune in New Orleans reported that thousands of residents were without power after the storms yesterday. And, I mean, it just seemingly is going on and on and on. And, Dave, I want to ask you quickly, when we see things like this happening across our country, is it possible that these are not just happenstance situations, but that perhaps God is working to get our attention?
Well, Gary, let me just quickly say this. I have family. My wife's parents live in the central part of Texas, down toward San Antonio. And they were telling us that one of their neighbors was going to leave and go over into, I think, Alabama, they said, over the weekend. And he left San Antonio, got up the highways just a short distance, had to turn around and come home because one of the major highways leaving that area of San Antonio was shut down because of the flooding. So you know, it totally altered travel plans. Our family is actually the ones that are coming in. Her family, my in-laws, are the ones coming in this weekend, and we just spoke with them, and they said they think, you know, the rains have stopped, at least where they live, and they're going to be able to make the trip. But it's just wreaked havoc down there. Some of the images I've seen are just unbelievable. But to answer your question, Gary, yes, I do believe that these types of what we sometimes call natural disasters are actually the hand of God trying to arrest the attention of the populace, the citizenry of a city, a state, a nation. Nahum 1:3 says, "The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind, and the clouds are the dust of his feet." And so God sometimes accomplishes his purpose, sometimes that purpose being a significant wake-up call through tragedies just like this.
Well, absolutely. And I think that here in the United States of America, we need to get back to God. My Memorial Day sermon on Sunday basically had to do with that. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. We remember those who have given their lives for our freedoms, but sometimes we forget God. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we are going to be having a special guest with us. His name is Ken Timmerman, a nationally recognized investigative reporter who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for his work that he's done to expose Iran's nuclear weapons program. And so you won't want to go away. You'll want to stay tuned and hear Ken as we talk about some things relative to the Middle East. So on behalf of Dave Kistler, Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl. Please don't go away. Come on back right after these messages, and we will continue Stand in the Gap today.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
On this day, May 26, 1907, a movie legend was born named Marion Michael Morrison, better known as John Wayne. He played football at USC and held some behind-the-scenes jobs at Fox Studios before being discovered by director John Ford, who cast the Duke in many epic Western and war films. Exemplifying courage, respect, and patriotism, John Wayne stated in the album America, Why I Love Her, "If we want to keep these freedoms, we may have to fight again. God forbid, but if we do, let's always fight to win. Face the flag, son, and thank God it's still there."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
So, thank you for coming to my town hall today and how wonderful Common Core is and how much money we got from the federal government for giving up control of education. Any questions?
So, Representative, we have adopted new National Common Core standards, but they are not higher than our existing standards, and they were never really tested.
Well, yes.
And now we have to retrain all our teachers again and make them teach from a script so they can teach to national tests?
Well, yes.
And buy lots of new computers and equipment and copyrighted lessons from the same people who are promoting Common Core?
Well, yes.
And we're going to share all our private, family, medical, disciplinary, and test results with people nationwide. Why are you supporting it?
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. In many ways, Memorial Day has become like so many other Monday holidays. Simply an excuse for an extended weekend to relax or have fun. But like other holidays, Memorial Day does have a much deeper meaning, as we remember those who gave their lives to give us the liberty and security that we now enjoy. This Memorial Day week, I believe we would do well to not only remember those sacrifices, but to dedicate ourselves to helping make our nation all that it should be. If we are to continue to ask our best young people to risk their lives for us and our nation, let us here at home do what we can to restore righteousness and virtue. Let's stand up for the sanctity of life, for traditional marriage, and for religious liberty. Let's work to bring moral principles back to the public square. That is a worthy tribute this and every Memorial Day.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, we are delighted to have with us Ken Timmerman. And in addition to what I mentioned about him before we took the break, in 2012, he was the Republican nominee for Congress in Maryland's 8th District. And to show you the caliber of a man that he is, he was endorsed by Ambassador John Bolton. And so, you know, with a man who's endorsed by a fellow of that caliber, you can see that Ken Timmerman is also a man of great caliber. It's interesting to note that he is also a witness to the persecuted church and has published a book about the Christians of Iraq. The book is called St. Peter's Bones, And Sam, I'm going to turn it over to you right now and share some more information if you would like, but at least introduce Ken Timmerman to our audience this afternoon, please.
Absolutely, Gary. We are thrilled to introduce to our listening audience and Standing in the Gap today, Ken Timmerman. Obviously, we've done some introducing of him right now, but Ken is an investigative reporter. He's recognized nationally, internationally. He was a Nobel Peace Prize. He was nominated for that in 2006 on his effort to expose Iran's nuclear weapons program. He's an author of some very popular books. One of them is Dark Forces, The Truth About What Happened in Benghazi, and a number of other things. But Ken, rather than take up all the time telling people about you, I'd like to let them hear from you. So welcome today to Stand in the Gap Today.
Thanks very much for having me on, and thank you for that, both of you, for that very gracious introduction.
Well, Ken, we're thrilled to have you here with us. And, you know, I want to start right out because you've got a lot to say, and we have a lot of questions to ask you, but you are one of the most foremost experts on worldwide geopolitical events, but I would say with a specific insight on events unfolding in the Middle East, particularly with Iran and the emergence of this attempt to reestablish an Islamic caliphate, and I would say also with Russia. You're an expert on that. You do give input to a range of U.S. government agencies. U.S. Army War College, I know, is one of them, and you regularly lecture at on Iran at the Pentagon's Joint Counterintelligence Training Academy. So you are qualified, Ken, and I am very – I'm going to start right out with this right here today by saying this. I want you to put, if you could, Ken, the confusing policies underway in the Middle East into perspective with our listeners. We spend a lot of time talking about the Middle East, but it's very confusing to most. Just a few days ago, as an example, I caught an interview by Michael Morrell, former CIA director, who, in response to a question to describe what's really happening in Syria, said, he said, quote, "It's the hardest foreign policy circumstance in our time. There are, in fact, multiple wars taking place in Syria." He talked one about a proxy war between the Saudis and Iran, and he talked about a secular war, or a war between a secular leader, Assad, and ISIS. And he talked about that. But I want to start right out by saying this, Ken. Would you agree with Michael that what's happening in the Middle East as it revolves around Syria to be the hardest foreign policy circumstance in our time? And briefly explain, if you would, and bring into focus what is happening in the Middle East from a geopolitical perspective. Who really is leading the effort there, and what are we seeing developing by all of this interaction in the Middle East? Can you kind of put it in perspective for us, please?
Sure, and I'm glad that you picked up on that statement by Mike Morrell, the former deputy director of CIA, somebody who I think has been wrong in just about every occasion and then goes and lies about it. He was the one who was advising Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice on Benghazi after it took place, who then lied about his involvement in crafting her talking points. Look, to say that Syria is the most difficult foreign policy challenge that we're facing is absurd. Syria is actually very simple. What's complicated about it is that this administration is supporting two sides in the Syrian conflict. They're supporting the Saudi-supported Muslim Brotherhood side, and then they're supporting the Iranians. And so you have the Saudis battling the Iranians in a proxy war in Syria, and that, in fact, does have this administration conflicted. Here's what's really going on. You mentioned the caliphate and efforts to establish the Islamic caliphate, to reestablish it. It was abolished in 1924. You have today three contenders to lead that caliphate. You have four contenders, if you include ISIS, who have already established part of the caliphate in Syria and Iraq. You have Saudi Arabia that see themselves as the global leader of Islam. They are the home, obviously, to the two mosques that Islam reveres. You have the Turks, where the caliphate was previously headquartered. And then, of course, you have Iran, which is a Shiite Muslim state, so they're the other major sect of Islam. And all four of these powers, if you wish, are battling for control of the Muslim world. That's what's going on right now, and the United States is confused because under Barack Obama, we have essentially reversed our longstanding support for Israel. We've reversed our longstanding support for Saudi Arabia as a check on Iran's power, and now we're supporting the Islamic Republic of Iran and about to give them major, a financial shot in the arm that will be a big boost to their efforts to dominate the Middle East and the Persian Gulf and beyond. So that's why they're confused about it, because they're supporting both sides.
In that regard, is the apparent conflict between the Saudis and Iran, where Saudis say, we will check you on the ground in Lebanon, we're going to check you on the ground in Iraq, Iran, you will not go further, but Iran comes back and says, we're going to disclose our own S-300 missile system, and they're down there in Yemen right now. Is this conflict truly an eternal conflict? Or is this a conflict made for the movie type things, where we can expect to see these powers ultimately come together in their agreement with a single caliphate coming forward?
No, I don't think they will come to agreement. This is a very serious, it's a deep-rooted conflict between the two different houses of Islam, if you wish, the Sunnis and the Shias. And added to that is the knowledge that the Saudis have that the Iranian regime wants to destroy them. They understand that. Our president doesn't seem to understand it when the Iranian leadership says that they will destroy America. But the Saudi king, he understands that very well, to such an extent that you now have intelligence and even military cooperation between Saudi Arabia and who? Israel, our best ally, or once our best ally, in the Middle East.
All right, that being the case, put together the thread of the Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood tends to be running through all of these. What is the unifying thread from the Muslim Brotherhood through all of these apparent enemies of each other, and what role are they ultimately playing in pulling together the caliphate in the Middle East?
Well, that's very interesting, and I think since the defeat of Mohammed Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood president of Egypt, by General al-Sisi, you have the Brotherhood has been thrown back on its heels, and the Saudis, who had been supporting factions of the Brotherhood before, have now withdrawn that support, which I think is a very good thing. It's a very positive thing. But the Muslim Brotherhood is clearly involved in Syria. They are involved in Libya on the ground, and they've been driven underground in Egypt. They are a force which, from time to time, emerges as a political force. They will play politics. In other words, they will play in the public sphere when they see it to their advantage. But otherwise, they go underground and they use subversion and terrorism as their main means of accomplishing their goals.
All right. So that being the case, I'm going to let's swing here a little bit on this regard and say, I want to go now into the relationship with Israel. Is Iran imminently on the verge of doing something militaristically wise with Israel, and how should we view the imminency of some kind of an engagement between Israel and Iran?
Well, to tell you the truth, I fear more an Iranian electromagnetic pulse attack on the United States than I do an Iranian attack on Israel. And the reason for this is that we have no defense whatsoever against this type of attack, which would involve a missile being launched from, say, Venezuela, or from a tramp ship, a tanker off of our coasts, and exploding 300 to 400 kilometers up in the atmosphere and taking out our electric power grid. We have no defense against that at this point. The Israelis have been defending themselves against Iranian aggression for quite some time. I was in Lebanon in 2006 during that last direct confrontation between Iran, its proxies Hezbollah, and the Israelis. They were hit by 4,000 rockets supplied by Iran and by Syria at that point. Today, Hezbollah has been resupplied by Iran, and they're said to have upwards of 100,000 rockets aimed at Israel. The Israelis are aware of this. They have new anti-missile systems that can take care of much of this threat. On the other hand, when the Iranians decide to actually go all in and launch thousands and thousands of missiles all at a single time, the Israelis do not have defenses for that. And at that point, I think they would attack the Iranian heartland in response.
All right, folks, you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. Our guest is Ken Timmerman, a nationally recognized investigative reporter. We're speaking today about the Middle East, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Israel. We're going to talk about Russia coming back and its role and how this whole thing fits together in the Middle East. And so I want you to stay with us as we come back. Dave and Gary are going to have questions for Ken. And I know that you're going to find this second half to be extraordinarily interesting. So, again, this is Sam Rohr on behalf of Gary Dull and Dave Kistler saying stay with us. And we'll be right back right after these announcements.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence which established the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. At least three people are dead, hundreds rescued from flash flooding in Harris County, Texas. Houston Mayor Anise Parker says there are thousands of cars and trucks abandoned.
As soon as the waters recede on streets and highways, we're moving the cars because we want traffic to flow as normally as possible.
There's also serious flooding in the Austin, Texas area and more rain in the forecast. A settlement between the city of Cleveland and Department of Justice is expected to be announced in an hour.
This settlement is the result of an 18-month-long investigation looking into the patterns and practices of the Cleveland Police Department. That investigation found a pattern of officers employing unreasonable and unnecessary use of force, including deadly force, that too often put innocent bystanders at risk.
Fox's Garrett Tenney in Cleveland. Fox News, we report. You decide.
Have you checked out our podcasts on our WFYL homepage? Did you know you could stream us anytime, night or day, 24/7 at 1180WFYL.com? If you like what you hear on WFYL, please email us at info@1180WFYL.com to let us know.
Hi, this is Nancy Becker, the Recorder of Deeds in Montgomery County. I'd like to read a quote from Mark Twain. In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man and brave and hated and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, and then it costs nothing to be a patriot.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYL.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Stand in the Gap Today. And along with Sam Rohr and David Kistler, I'm Gary Dull. We are interviewing Ken Timmerman, who, of course, is an expert on the Middle East. And Ken, you ran for Congress in the 9th Maryland, the Maryland's 8th district. I'm sorry, the 8th district in Maryland. What part of Maryland does that cover?
Well, it goes all the way up to the Pennsylvania border, just south of Gettysburg. So we've got most of Frederick County, Maryland, most of Carroll County, Maryland, and then and those are good conservative areas. And then it dives deep into the Washington, D.C. suburbs in Montgomery County, and that's kind of where I washed up.
That's where you struggled.
That's right.
But I'll tell you, like I said at the introduction, having John Bolton with you, that says an awful lot to me and many of our listeners. And so, you know, that's great. We're going to go to Dave Kistler with a question right now. Ken, Dave?
Thank you, Gary. Ken, delight to have you aboard. I want to make a comment, then ask my question. Just my comment is simply this. Your book, Dark Forces, The Truth About What Happened in Benghazi, is an absolutely phenomenal read. I want to recommend it to our listening audience. And, Ken, I want to thank you for being courageous enough to write such an outstanding book. And then I want to ask this. You know, though the president speaks to the contrary incessantly, he seems to be far more committed to strengthening a relationship with Iran and weakening our relationship, our longstanding relationship with the nation of Israel. Can you comment on what you believe is behind this incredibly dangerous policy? I mean, what is the president's end game, do you believe?
Well, I honestly don't know, and I've tried to refrain from speculating about his state of mind or about his loyalties. But what we can say with absolutely no equivocation whatsoever is that this president has stood on its head our previous alliances. Instead of standing side by side with Israel, he has opposed Israel in every venue that he can possibly do. It has become more difficult with this president to be a Jew in your capital, Jerusalem, building an apartment than to be a mullah in Tehran building nuclear weapons. If you're a mullah in Tehran building nuclear weapons, this president will shower you with gifts. He will offer you tens of billions of dollars in aid and freeing your assets and everything else. If you're a Jew building an apartment in your capital, Jerusalem, he will take you to the United Nations. He will castigate you, call you an obstacle to peace, and worse. So he has turned our alliances on their head, and he's done so to enable worldwide radical Islamic regimes, from the regime in Tehran to the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt to the current jihadi regime that has now taken over Libya. By the way, a civil war which was absolutely unnecessary. Gaddafi had been completely tamed. I was in Libya in 2004 when he turned over his weapons of mass destruction. I saw the centrifuges actually go onto a U.S. ship and sail out of his harbor. There was no threat from Gaddafi to us, and yet under Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, we helped the jihadis get rid of Gaddafi, and now that country is in utter chaos.
You know, Ken, I couldn't agree with you more in your comment there about Libya. Let me just jump over to one other question, and then, Gary or Sam, I'll go back to you. Your book, Dark Forces, again, is an outstanding read, and I'm asking you questions kind of to look into your crystal ball, I guess. But do you think the truth about what really happened there is going to come out as far as this investigative committee headed up by Trey Gowdy? Do you think they're going to get to the truth of this and it's going to be known to the American people? And if it is, should that be the case, will it be the death knell for Hillary Clinton's campaign?
I think they are going to do their darndest to get to the bottom of it. And I know Trey Gowdy personally, and I've worked with some of his staff, and I know the kind of questions they're asking, and I know the kind of witnesses that they are debriefing. Right now they're doing it behind closed doors. They're going to get people like Sid Blumenthal, who is Hillary Clinton's a paid aide. He was on the payroll, apparently, of the Clinton Foundation. They're also going to all of the military people in the chain of command. And they will try to discover if there were, for example, was there a rescue force that was stood down on the orders of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. I believe when that information does come out, it's going to be very difficult for her to stand up in front of the American people and say, I deserve to be Commander-in-Chief. But there's a problem here. And the problem is that we have got tens of millions of Americans who just don't care, who are tuned out, who are not aware, who are not paying attention. Just about 10 days ago, there was a very well-known pollster, Democratic pollster, who held a series of focus groups in, I think it was Iowa. They all were ready for Hillary. They were ready to vote for Hillary. He asked them, can you think of one accomplishment of Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State? No. One accomplishment when she was First Lady? No. One accomplishment when she was a U.S. Senator? No. But they were all ready to vote for it. That's the problem that we got, is people are not aware and paying attention.
You know, I saw that report, and I thought it was quite serious on her behalf, quite sad, you know, when some of her supporters can't even point to what she's done as Secretary of State. I mean, it's just, you know, she's an empty piece of clothing, and Ken, I just cannot expect, I cannot anticipate seeing what her presidency would be like. I mean, as a matter of fact, I just don't think she'll make it. If she gets into the White House, I think I will have lost all confidence in the American voter, but you never know what's going to happen. Let me shift gears just a little bit, though, Ken, and ask about Russia. You know, I'm 62, almost 63 years of age, and from the time that I was born and growing up, it seems like Russia has been at the forefront of our policies in the United States of America, and particularly our foreign policy. Let me ask, relative to the Middle East, what is Russia's role in the Middle East today? And do you think we will see Russia allow Syria to fall?
Russia will do its best to keep Syria from falling. They are all in, so to speak, just as the Iranians are, and they're all on the same side. Russia made a strategic decision in, I would say, 1995, under Boris Yeltsin. And at that point, they decided that it was in their strategic long-term interest to oppose the United States in the Middle East and to support proxies who would oppose us. So at that point, and the reason I say this, because there's a document which was obtained by Representative Kurt Weldon from Pennsylvania at that point, which I reproduced in one of my earlier books, Countdown to Crisis, The Coming Nuclear Showdown with Iran in 2005. It was a document from the Russian General Staff saying, we're going to ship gyroscopes for SS-18 missiles to Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and we're going to help Iran to acquire nuclear weapons. This was 1995. Their strategic rationale was that Iran, a powerful Iran and a powerful Iraq, would serve as counterpoints to drive the United States out of the Persian Gulf and therefore allow Russia to reemerge as a dominant power. That is their ultimate goal. But they do not have the financial wherewithal, they do not have the resources, the human resources, at this point to accomplish that by themselves. So they need proxies like the Islamic regime in Iran.
Ken, back to Sam again, back to you now. Follow up on that question there right now. If you were in the sitting in the Middle East, if an ISIS person and a Hezbollah person who wants a caliphate reestablished there in that Middle East, who do you think they view as the greatest international power coming up, say, in the next couple of years? Is it us, or is it Russia, or is it China?
I think they believe that we are a spent power and that we will be easily defeated, and I fear that. I fear under this president that we have gotten much closer to that than I ever would have imagined in my lifetime. ISIS, if they are looking to a power that would counteract them, they certainly don't see Russia. They certainly don't see China, and they certainly don't see the United States. Ironically, ISIS got a significant assistance from the Iranian regime in the beginning. The Iranians played fire the same way that the Russians did, the Soviets did, for many, many years. They would light a fire in your neighborhood, in your backyard, and said, your house is about to catch on fire. Can I come and help you put it out? So the Iranians helped to light the fire of ISIS, and that gave them the excuse to go into Iraq, to send their soldiers in Iraq, to send their soldiers into Syria, to then try to put the fire out. Iran is certainly an emerging power, not just in the Persian Gulf, but throughout the Middle East.
We have about another minute left here, but tell me, follow up one question you said. You said you feared Iran doing something more against the United States than you did actually against Israel. Fill us in just a little bit more on why you're saying that.
Well, the main reason is because with this president, I do not see the will on the part of our leadership to do anything about an Iranian attack, whereas with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, I have faith and confidence that he would take determined action, both preventative action and retributive action, should that become necessary. That's really what I'm talking about. I'm very worried about our electric grill and our vulnerabilities, and I see that we're doing nothing at all to protect ourselves. And that EMP vulnerability is a catastrophic event. It's one of the 10 black swan events that even the U.S. intelligence community is now warning about.
Ken, thank you so much. Next 15 seconds, please tell us, where can people contact you if they want to follow up or contact Ken Timmerman?
Easiest thing is kentimmerman.com, kentimmerman.com. You can find my books, especially the one about the persecuted church as well, St. Peter's Bones, and my latest on Benghazi.
Thank you so much, Ken Timmerman, guest, for being with us today. We appreciate it so very, very, very much. And we hope to have you back with us sometime here in the future. Folks, you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr with David Kistler and Gary Dahl. And we thank you for being with us today. Stay with us, and we're going to come right back after these commercials for the conclusion of today's program.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Young Winston struggled in school. He failed the entrance exam twice before entering Britain's military academy. His early success in politics gave way to midlife failure. And in the mind of the public, his career was ended. Of course, we all know Winston Churchill went on to become England's Prime Minister during World War II. But did you know that, after the war, voters tossed him out of office, despite his wartime leadership and popularity? This is Howard Butt Jr. of Laity Lodge. Churchill's career reminds us that early failure cannot predict future success. Neither can present success guarantee the future. The best thing, the only thing, is to do your best, be your best in each moment in the high calling of our daily work.
Learn more at thehighcalling.org.
In Psalm 62, King David says, "Truly my soul waits upon God, and from him comes my salvation." He says, "God only is my rock, my security, my defense, and because of this, I can remain steadfast and confident in times of trouble." I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. As we look around this nation, we witness evil and persecution increasing against God's people, just what David saw. People were plotting mischief against each other, conspiring against God and trampling the truth. Rulers were lying and hypocritically flattering in public, but cursing in private. But David said, "Take heart. Men of such character are vanity and self-deceived, and God will reward them accordingly." In such times, David says, "Trust in God at all times. Pour out your heart before him, for he is our refuge." I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you if you can say with David, "Power, authority, and blessing belong to God. My soul waits upon him. My expectation comes from him."
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Stand in the Gap today with Dave Kistler, Sam Rohrer, and Gary Dull. And, Sam, that was a tremendous interview with Ken Timmerman. And I hope, as Dave said, we can have him back with us sometime in the near future, and maybe a number of times to keep us up to date as to what's going on out there. But, you know, in a related subject, it was General Mark Welsh, who, of course, is the head of the United States Air Force, who recently came out to warn that severe defense budget cuts will impact the United States air superiority against enemies that may be either out there now, such as Russia or China, or other nations that will come along in the next 3 to 5 to 8 years. As a matter of fact, General Welsh emphasizes that it could very well be that some of the air power that both Russia and China is building could land into the hands of some of these other uprising nations, to the point, or I should say up-and-coming nations that may be uprising nations. But that is all going to come back to bite the United States of America if we don't strengthen our defense budget. And the question that I have to ask you, Brother Sam, is this. You know, with 200,000 fewer people that we have in active duty today, which is, by the way, 40% less than those who were involved in the Gulf War, is it even possible for us to come back and be a strong nation in a short period of time? How long do you think it's going to take us to come back to what I would refer to as a superpower status?
Gary, I don't know that I have the answer to that, because I am not able to tell you for a fact, unless you would know, for instance, what the real state of preparedness is for our military. In other words, I know there's much of our equipment that is old. How much is new, I don't know. I know that there are some with whom I've talked and say, hey, that look, we have the absolute best state-of-the-art equipment of anybody in the world. Well, maybe we do. I don't know that question, but I do know this, Gary, that winning a war is not just with even the amount of equipment that you have, although that very, very, very important, but it's also the kind of leadership that you have. It's the will that your troops have. And do they have that esprit de corps, you know, that's so necessary to win? You know, Iraq gave up territory last week to ISIS, and one of our military guys blamed it on that it wasn't that Iraq didn't have the equipment or the men, but they didn't have the will. Well, you know what? I don't know, Gary, but I know that leadership is critically important, and you have to know what it is that you are defending and what it is we're trying to keep a hold of. And I don't think that that's coming out of our administration. So right now, I would say we'd be in a weakened condition because of that, Gary.
Gary, if yes, I could interject right here very, very quickly. Sam, what you just said is identical to what General McChrystal, I don't know if you saw his interview earlier today with, I can't remember who the interviewer was, but anyway, the very question or the very statement you made, he said verbatim, almost verbatim. He said the issue has nothing to do with logistics as to why, you know, what's going on in Iraq is taking place, and Ramadi fell and these other cities fell and the Iraqi troops are fleeing. He said it has nothing to do with logistics. He said they have higher numbers than ISIS. They have really better equipment than ISIS, but the will to win, the will to fight is not there. And that's, Gary, what scares me to death about what's happening within the United States. We have people leaving because of what's happened under the current administration within our United States military. And do we have the best equipment? Probably. Do we have the best qualified, best trained people? Perhaps. But do we have under the current administration the will, the necessary requisite will to actually win, no matter what the cost? That's what's up for debate right now. And it's downright frightening, to be honest with you.
Well, it is. The information that I have before me here says that as far as air power is concerned, planes and so forth, the F-35 that we have is still in pretty good condition and will stay a generation ahead of anything that China or Russia could develop, along with the F-22. But everything else is really falling back. And so consequently, you know, we are losing the air power, and of course we are losing the amount of people that we have in active duty today. But I agree with you, men, that the whole idea of attitude makes all the difference in the world. We need a leader in Washington who really is a strong commander in chief, who is going to strengthen our military. And Sam, I would think that today, with everything taking place in Russia and the Middle East, that any president who really wants to defend the United States from its enemies, foreign and domestic, would be strengthening our military, not weakening. What is this guy up to?
Well, you know, it's the same question we tried to ask Ken. And Ken was very careful in his last interview to not assign that clear motive. What you can say, though, is that it's not being done. That we know. And the fact that it's not being done, and the fact that there's not a clear policy relative to our friends, meaning our historic friends, those who love freedom friends, and our enemies, those who hate freedom. The fact that those policies are confused, the fact that those policies are all over the board out of this White House, this means of necessity almost that you're not going to have any kind of direction, which from a military perspective, it is strategic. It's based on goals. It's based on objectives. And that's the lacking part that we have, Gary. And clear, I mean, I think we've often said many times, you know, where are the loyalties? And again, you can say whatever you want, but at the end of the day, the relationship with Iran is stronger, going stronger, and relationship with Israel is getting less strong. That's about all we need to say, whatever reason it is, but that's a bad direction to be going.
Well, it is. And Dave, you know, we have a long way to go as it relates to the next election. I mean, you know, it's a long way to November of 2016. But as you look at the Republican candidates right now, are there any two or three candidates there that you think might be good, strong, solid commander-in-chief potential?
Well, you know, Gary, the answer to that is yes. I like what I see, certainly, in Texas Governor Rick Perry. I know he's not formally announced that he's a candidate, but I fully anticipate that he will. He has led a state. He's very, very strong on guarding the borders, and I think he would be an outstanding leader from a foreign policy standpoint, as well as domestically. I like what I see in Marco Rubio. I certainly like what I see in Ted Cruz. I like what I see in Scott Walker. So I think, you know, there are others too. Mike Huckabee, there's things I really like about him as well. But Gary, the bottom line is this: anything would be better than what we have right now, which is no leadership. And I'm encouraged by what I see out there on the horizon with some of these candidates.
It is sad that we have no leadership right now, and I agree with that 100%. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we do want to thank you very much for being with us on this Tuesday edition of Stand in the Gap today. And I trust that you'll have a great day, and the Lord willing, we will be back again with you tomorrow. And on behalf of Dave Kistler, Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl, saying stand in the gap for faith and freedom. Keep looking up, because we know without a doubt the best is yet to come. God bless you. Have a great day.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Taken from Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address, March 4th, 1801.